Evening.
Evening.
It's nice to see some new faces. Welcome. And some new old faces. Welcome. Or welcome back. We were working through the Denko Roku, put together by Zen Master Keizan, and as most of you know, we are up to the 13th Indian patriarch, Kapimala, his name is. So let me read you the case. The 13th patriarch was the venerable Kapimala. One time, the venerable Ashvaghosa spoke about the ocean of Buddha nature, and he said, "Mountains and rivers and the great earth appear in dependence on this Buddha nature. The three kinds of spiritual knowledge and the six paranormal powers all appear as a result of it." The master, Kapimala, hearing this, was awakened. Now, as you know, we talked about very early on when we are getting into the Indian patriarchs, there's a lot of mysticism and magic. Changes radically when a Zen goes to the Chinese, into China. And here we have a plethora of magical, wonderful happenings. So let me just read the circumstances that lead up to this conversation between Kapimala and his teacher, Ashvaghosa. The master, Kapimala, was from the kingdom of Kasi. In the beginning, when he was a follower of non-Buddhist teachings, he had 3,000 followers. And he studied all the different theories. Now the venerable Ashvaghosa was preaching the Dharma in Magadha when all of a sudden an old man collapsed to the ground in front of his seat. The venerable Ashvaghosa told the assembly, "This is no ordinary man. There must be something different about him." No sooner had he spoken then the old man disappeared, and a man of golden color popped out of the earth. Then the old fellow changed into a female. Pointing to Ashvaghosa with her right hand, she said, "I bow deeply to you, venerable elder. In accordance with the Tathagata's prediction, you must now expound the highest truth right here and now in this place." A bit arrogant, right? As soon as she finished speaking, she disappeared. The venerable Ashvaghosa said, "A demon will appear to test his powers against mine." After a while, the wind rose. The rain poured down. Heaven and earth became dark. Ashvaghosa said, "Well, this proves that a demon is coming. I'll get rid of it." Then he pointed to the sky and a huge golden dragon appeared. This is wonderful, isn't it? And a huge golden dragon appeared, displaying great powers and making the mountains tremble. But the venerable Ashvaghosa sat solemnly in meditation, and the demon's acts consequently ceased. 7 days later, a small insect appeared, no larger than a speck, and it concealed itself beneath Ashvaghosa's seat. The venerable grasped it in his hand and said to the assembly, "This is the transformation of the demon. He just wants to eavesdrop now on my teachings." He released the insect, but it was unable to move. And then the venerable Ashvaghosa spoke to it, saying, "If you will just take refuge in the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you will then be able to regain your powers." The demon at once resumed his former shape, bowed, and repented. The venerable then asked him, "What is your name? How many followers do you have?" And the demon replied, "I am Kapimala. I have 3,000 followers." Ashvaghosa said, "Well, what can you do when you use all of your powers?" And the demon replied, "Well, I can consider changing the great ocean. That's very easy." The venerable said, "But can you transform the ocean of Buddha nature?" The demon asked, "Well, what do you mean by the ocean of Buddha nature? I still don't understand." And the venerable then told him about the ocean of Buddha nature, saying, "Mountains, rivers, and the great earth all appear in dependence on it. The three kinds of spiritual knowledge and the six supernatural powers appear as a result of it." And then the master Kapimala, hearing this, aroused his own faith and was awakened. So there's the background to the main case. Quite something. Well, as I was thinking about this koan, sitting with it and preparing, I thought once again about something I had said maybe about a month ago. Some of you may remember about my experience in the 70s with transcendental meditation. I was told when I first got interested in spiritual practices that I got interested in transcendental meditation. And I went to talk to somebody at the TM Center who was trying to convince me that TM was the be-all and end-all, you know. And when I was kind of questioning it, he said, "I can teach you how to fly, you know." I said, "Well, what?" Well, it's called yogic flying. Some of you may have heard about it if you've had any interest or study in TM. You can probably go on YouTube and see somebody doing that. Basically, it's hopping. He told me that if I was a dedicated practitioner of TM, I could fly and I would start. The first stage was hopping. And you can see somebody on YouTube hopping if you want. They seem very happy hopping. They remind me of little rabbits, you know, kind of hopping rabbits. And then if I continued to practice diligently over time, not only I could hop, but I could really kind of jump in meditation. And then if I kept going, I could be master of the skies. Master of the skies. And then I went to see my Zen teacher, to meet him, and he told me about compassion as the highest teaching. And I went with him. He told me that if I really wanted to fly for a few bucks, I could go anywhere I wanted. You see? I was hearing, some time ago, I was hearing another teacher, his name was Musai, talking about this. He said he visited Suzuki Roshi. Suzuki Roshi said about Zen practice that you could live your life very happily without Zen practice, of course. But he said for him, it was like setting your clock, but with Zen practice, you knew what time it was. A life without Zen, he said, was like just setting your clock. But with Zen practice, you knew the time, which was interesting to me. In other words, for me, it meant you set an intention in your life. You know, you. In other words, instead of just living your life existing, you set an intention for how you wanted to live. You know, that's, I understood it. That's what he meant when he said, "You know the time." You know, you also know about life and death, and it becomes very important to you. You're not just passing by, existing without living. You know. And it also reminds me of the story of the Buddha. The story of the Buddha in the sutras, early sutras, is that one day the Buddha and a yogic master are crossing the river. And the yoga master turns to the Buddha and says, "I can walk across this river, I can walk on water." And the Buddha says, "Wow, that's fascinating. How long did it take you to learn that?" And he said, "Oh, about 20 years. He said, "20 years, my God, I could take the ferry for a dollar." You see. The point here for me in this first part of this koan is a recognition that in our life, in terms of Zen practice, what we want to do is practice so that we see the magic and the mystery and the beauty in ordinary moments. Not in something special that we're trying to cultivate, but if you know how to look, which is what Zen practice is interested in teaching you, how to see, then you see the ocean of Buddha nature in each thing. The leaf, the pine, your partner's smile, the breeze at night. See. And I think Suzuki Roshi was saying, don't miss those things. That we find the extraordinary in the ordinary, and the ordinary extraordinary. See. If you don't know yet, you must understand that there's magic everywhere. So the next part of this is Keizan's Teisho. The more I read through and study the Denko Roku, the more I fall in love with Keizan. How beautiful that to put this together and his insights as we go through each one of them. I hope you're reading these along with me, those who have been here looking at them. First of all, the first teaching here is understanding Ashvaghosa's relationship to the demon. It's metaphorical. And you notice that when he encounters a demon, he just sits. He stays present. He gets rid of it by simply being present to it. He doesn't do anything to get rid of the demon. And through his sitting, the demon disappears. This is about us. This is about our zazen. This is about how you work with your mind when your demons appear on the cushion. The demon of fear. The demon of anger. The demon of vengeance. How do you work with them in your sitting practice? You see. I think each one of us come to practice with our own limp, you know, with our own wound. I first came to practice because I don't think I was loving myself enough. And I think what I needed initially out of practice was to learn how to be more loving of myself. And, of course, then others. You can only love others quite as far as you love yourself, you know, really. But I don't know what brings you folks to practice. Maybe it's a lack of self-confidence or issues with anger or stress or whatever it may be for you that bring you here. You're a demon. And if you know how to work with your demon, then you'll find that your demon transforms itself into your greatest ally if you know how to work with it. See? Because it's the demon that will help move you forward in your practice. not your strengths. So when our demons arise, what do? In Zazen, we acknowledge them, we breathe in, we breathe out, we say hello, how you doing? Good to see you again, old friend. Okay. Now, this second part of the Teisho, Keizan talks about samadhi. He says there are six supernatural powers. The three what does he say? The six paranormal powers and the three kinds of spiritual knowledge all appear as a result of the ocean of Buddha nature. They all arise out of it. There's nothing that doesn't arise out of it. Nothing. Now, this Buddha nature has no form, it has no beginning, it has no end. It is uncaused. It is. And yet at the same time, everything manifests itself as a result of it. Mountains, he says, rivers, oceans, all unfold as a result of this Buddha nature, which has no name, no form of its own. Has no beginning and no end, as we chant in the Heart Sutra. And yet, at the same time, everything is here because of it. Keizan goes on to talk about samadhi. He says, as for samadhi, there are innumerable samadhis. These are beginningless and endless and beyond number. Now, a word about samadhi. There are all kinds of samadhis. Yasutani Roshi talked about absolute samadhi, and he talked about positive samadhi, for example. Absolute samadhi is zazen, whether it's working with koans or working in what we call shikantaza, just sitting. And there are positive samadhis, cooking, walking, cleaning, loving, washing your car. These are positive samadhis. What is samadhi? Samadhi means a complete engagement with whatever you're doing. Complete and full engagement, immersion in it, whether it's making love or cleaning your car or washing dishes. That's another kind of samadhi. Yoga. Whether you choose a practice, a samadhi practice, like shikantaza or koans, it is based on your temperament, you know? It's based, I think, on our own personality and what calls us. I was interested in koan study because it was difficult. And my nature is to take on whatever is difficult and go after it. Sometimes to my great detriment. But that's my temperament. Other people have a different temperament. You know, not as bullheaded as I am. But we find the practice that works for us based on our own style, our own personality, our own way, you know. Here's a little bit more of Keizan's Teisho. Everything, even the smallest atom, are all boundless things. They are not subject to number or limit. the ocean of Buddha nature. They are like this because they are the ocean of nature. Moreover, to see this present body is to see itself our original mind. Because body and mind are not at all two separate things. How can our nature and our characteristics be divided? What a beautiful question. How could they be divided? We divide them. They're not divided. Even though this demon revealed supernatural powers while a member of a non-Buddhist tradition, and that was still not apart from mind or the ocean of nature. He did not realize it. He did not realize that it was something called ocean of nature. Therefore, he both doubted himself and others. But it is still the ocean of nature, whether he was aware of it or not. Even if you understand the true nature of the mountains and the rivers and the great earth, please do not get uselessly entangled with sounds and forms. So as soon as we grab onto something as an idea and we fix it or reify it, we have missed it once again. Even if you clarify your original nature, do not settle down into ordinary knowledge. Yet, even ordinary knowledge is nothing other than the one or two Buddha faces, as are the hedges and the walls and the tiles and the pebbles. All are your original face. Moreover, once this ocean of nature is established, once there's a realization about it in us, to see, once we see it, movement and stillness and coming and going are necessarily connected with it. And the skin and the flesh and the bones and the marrow are manifested when it is time. So everything unfolds from this kind of consciousness. Quite beautiful. Quite beautiful. Therefore, when Buddha nature is manifested, not a speck is added. And when it is concealed, not a hair is lost. You see, it's always there. When these various components are put together, it becomes this body. Aggregates. These are called aggregates. When the myriad things are obliterated, we refer to it as one mind. Zen Master Xue Feng said, "If you want to understand this matter, it is as if there were an ancient mirror inside of us." This is a beautiful, beautiful teaching. There's an ancient mirror inside of you. When a Mongol appears before it, a Mongol is reflected. When the Chinese appear in front of it, then a Chinese is reflected. You see, they're all you. They appear now as someone who's Chinese, someone who is black, someone who is gay, someone who is straight, someone who is young, someone who is old. They're all you. Their mirror is you. And what's reflected in the mirror is you. When you have a consciousness of this ocean of nature that is who you are, it doesn't matter what's reflected in it. There are just different forms and shapes of you. And so this takes me back to the highest teaching of compassion. Because when you actually see that whatever is crossing your path is you, it changes the way you relate to it. Who can you exclude? How can you be blind to the homeless person walking across the street? Who would you ignore? Who would you criticize and put down? Who would you not feed? This is a beautiful, beautiful teaching. Kapi Mala, the 13th patriarch. When I first opened it, I said, this has nothing to do with me. What's this stuff with insects and people disappearing and men turning to women? It has a lot to do with.